Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. There are federal charges now against the driver of that big rig found jammed with the dead and dying in a San Antonio, Texas, Walmart parking lot last weekend. Human smuggling and a real scene of horror. It's once more lit up a national debate. Border control proponents say make the borders tighter. Immigration advocates say stronger borders only force migrants to take extreme measures like those in San Antonio. This hour on Point, San Antonio's smuggling tragedy and the border debate. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on what should we learn from this tragedy. Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Here's San Antonio Fire Chief Charles Hood describing the conditions of people found alive inside the back of that cramped, overheated 18-wheeler.
Our paramedics and firefighters found that each one of them had heart rates over about 130 beats per minute, which, again, they were very hot to the touch. So these people were in that trailer without any signs of any type of water. So you're looking at a lot of a heat stroke, a lot of dehydration.
And a lot of death, it turns out. Nine, ten by the time Monday came around. Here was Police Chief William McManus calling what happened in San Antonio human trafficking. Said federal authorities are involved in the investigation.
We're looking at human trafficking crime here this evening. Department of Homeland Security is involved. They're working with us. Homicide will work with them to determine the origin of this horrific tragedy.
Well, we can talk about definitions of trafficking, human smuggling here. There's no question it was a tragedy. Here's a 27-year-old Mexican laborer, Adan Laravega, who survived that deadly ride. He told the Associated Press what it was like inside the tractor trailer in an interview from his hospital bed in San Antonio. Lots of people who survived were in critical condition. He boarded the trailer in the border city of Laredo, Texas. And here's Laravega saying, when we arrived there, the trailer was already full. Frankly, I couldn't tell you how many people were there. But full? The trailer was full. Did you have water? Nope. When I woke up, I looked around everywhere, and I woke up and wanted to run because I felt faint. I fell. I fell because I was very weak. I needed to be drinking only liquids to be able to control myself. The voice of just one of those packed into the back of that big rig found, early Sunday. Joining me first today from San Antonio is Guillermo Contreras. He's a senior reporter on federal courts and agencies at the San Antonio Express News. Guillermo Contreras, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Well, what's the latest on the charges being faced by the driver?
Well, he faces one charge. That's kind of an umbrella charge, basically, smuggling immigrants for financial gain that resulted in death, and it includes all of them in that one stack charge. But he, it's kind of fast developing. Yesterday, for instance, we found out that a couple of the victims or the people that had been in the trailer were released and were brought over to court to be processed as immigrants. As material witnesses. So basically, they're held in custody until they're needed. They give depositions, and then it's the way the government's way of keeping tabs on them, so they're around for testifying against the defendant.
James M. Bradley Jr., the driver, 60 years old, he'll be making his first court appearance today. This charge comes with a potentially very steep punishment, unlimited prison term, or even capital punishment if the smuggling, knowingly transporting people in the country illegally, if it results in death. And clearly here it has, Guillermo.
Yes, he was informed of that, that he could face a death penalty. He was appointed two lawyers because it is a potential death penalty case. One of those Yeah, both of those. One of them is an assistant public defender with experience in death penalty type cases, and another one comes from a kind of a panel of attorneys here in the community that also has experience in these kind of cases.
The tractor trailer found early Sunday morning outside a Walmart packed with undocumented immigrants, eight already dead. Can you take us back to what we know about the beginning of this? Where did this truck originate, and how and where did those who were in the back of the truck come on board?
From best we can gather is that, the court documents do say that that it was loaded up in Laredo. We've been, through our investigation, we've kind of learned that it was somewhere in central Laredo, which is right on the border, and that the truck came towards San Antonio, which is about a two-hour drive, and pulled over at a Walmart store just kind of in the southwest part of the city here along the interstate corridor, the one that runs all the way, I think, up to Minnesota. If you recall, there was a passenger who got out or had been out in some fashion, and this is where it gets kind of hazy on the details, but the passenger went out who had been in the trailer and asked for water. And an employee of Walmart brought out water, saw a bunch of people outside, and called police, and that's how they were discovered.
Now, I mean, we read, though, that this wasn't all, not everybody got on at once, that it made stops around the area, picking up people at different points. Can you confirm that, Guillermo?
Well, we've heard that, but, we haven't been able to confirm it because they might operate is, yeah, they'll have a number of people at a certain, maybe a certain stash house or stash area in a commercial district, or they'll drop them off somewhere there where it's hidden, and the truck will pull in somewhere else, and similar thing, another load gets on until, the smuggling group has enough people of, what it thinks would fit in the vehicle, and then send it on its way.
Now, a lot of these people had come across the Rio Grande not too long ago, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, and what we learned through the court documents is that this operation is overseen by the CETAs. I mean, they're taking, if not coordinating it themselves, they are taking quite a bit of off the top, because they do control what's called that Nuevo Laredo Plaza down there.
The center of Laredo, the Zetas, the Mexican gang, but they control the traffic through this part of the city of Laredo.
Right. I mean, basically, it's the Nuevo Laredo is in Mexico, but anything coming north, drugs, whatever it might be that's illegal,
yeah,
they control it, and people have to, anybody else who's involved in criminal activity has to pay kind of a tax to them.
Is it credible? The driver says that he was delivering this truck to a new owner. I think it was supposed to go to Brownsville. San Antonio is the opposite direction. Is it credible that he could have not known if it's stopping and being loaded with so many people? I mean, they're saying 180 or 200. No one knows exactly. That he could have not known the people were on board?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, yeah, his employer verifies that his story that he was supposed to go from Iowa to deliver the truck, which had been sold down, or not the truck, but the trailer, down to Brownsville. Now, Brownsville is in a completely different direction from San Antonio. You could conceivably come through San Antonio to go to Brownsville. But they can't explain, what was he doing in Laredo? The employers can't figure it out. And why did he come back to San Antonio if he's going to go back to Brownsville? Because he could have taken a different highway from Laredo along the border to go to Brownsville. So, and the other thing here is he claims that he couldn't hear them. And I've tried to talk to some truckers, and I just got an email this morning from another one saying that refrigerated trailers like this one have pretty thick walls, and it might be conceivable that you can't hear the people inside banging on the wall. I haven't checked out the thickness of the trailer or that kind of thing, or verified that beyond what I'm told here. But there is that argument, and I'm sure that the defense may explore that argument.
Of course, the refrigeration not working at all here. There were four vents in that trailer, only three out of the four completely clogged. We're told that the people inside were trying to take turns getting a little fresh air through that tiny half-clogged vent that was still open. The driver says that when he finally heard banging, went back and opened the doors, he said he was run over by Spanish people, knocked to the ground, and then he said he noticed bodies lying on the floor like meat. The driver saying, telling authorities that. But then we also have the picture of people who weren't dead or in desperate condition getting out of there. Here was the San Antonio police chief saying that not everybody ended up in the hospital. Authorities said six SUVs showed up in the Walmart parking lot. They don't know yet who was driving them.
There were a number of vehicles that came in and picked up a lot of the folks that were in that trailer that survived the trip.
San Antonio Police Chief William McManus there. Guillermo, who would that be? Is that more Zetas? They knew where this truck was. They knew that there was trouble. They'd come to round up people that were paying them to get successfully into the U.S.?
You know, that's the belief that, you know, these are the smuggler, part of the smuggling chain on this side, because some of them did run off into the brush. So some, basically just wanted to get away from everything. There was one of the 39. There was actually one found in the brush. So there was a helicopter doing a search. So, you know, it's unclear how many ran off and how many actually got into those six SUVs. And San Antonio is known as a kind of a transpoint for stash houses. Just the same day that this happened, there was a stash house that was taken down on the city's west side, and 11 immigrants were rescued from there.
Stash houses and smuggling chains, this appears to a layman's eye to be part of a pretty sophisticated outfit. A lot of times these people will agree to pay back maybe $5,000 or more over time. They do that by working in the U.S. If they die, that doesn't work for the smugglers either, does it, Guillermo?
No, it doesn't, but, you know, they don't. And that's why they, you know, they take to these measures, you know, packing as many as you can in there. Those that do survive, they hold them in these stash houses. For instance, the one that was taken down Sunday, and they try to extort a little more from the families.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030.
Hi, it's Tom. Before we get back to the show, I wanted to tell you to be sure and stay with us till the very end of this podcast for a preview of Freak Out and Carry On. It's WBUR's new podcast that addresses today's politics through a historical lens. Give it a listen, and thanks. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about the southern border and American immigration policy after the human smuggling tragedy in the back of that truck in the Walmart parking lot in San Antonio, Texas. Guillermo Contreras is with us, senior reporter at the San Antonio Express News. He's been all over this. You can find some of his latest work at our website, onpointradio.org, and you can join us in this hour. Have you pictured yourself in the back of that truck? Texans, border state listeners, please explain what you can about exactly how this goes on. Do you see the smuggling? What's the right law enforcement response to this, the right policy response to this? Are President Trump's immigration policies helping or hurting here? What about the wall? We'll talk about the wall before this hour is over. The mayor of Laredo, Texas, Pete Sines, joins us in just a moment as well. This was Reyna Torres, Mexico's consul general in San Antonio, telling Texas Public Radio that the consul there would help return bodies of victims from the 18-wheeler tragedy to Mexico.
We are going to be helping the families that want to send the bodies of the deceased to Mexico. We are also providing legal assistance for those that want to follow up a case here in the U.S.
And the San Antonio police chief, we heard earlier from him, but William McManus, telling reporters early Sunday morning that this is not all that unusual. This is not an isolated incident.
This is not an isolated incident. This happens quite frequently. Fortunately, we came across this one. Fortunately, there are people who survived.
But happens all the time. Tractor trailers used to smuggle people into the U.S., up into the body of the U.S. And here's Texas Democratic Congressman Joaquin Castro, whose district includes about half of San Antonio, telling NPR's Morning Edition today that there's a connection between this tragedy and overall U.S. immigration policy.
It is a human tragedy. Over the generations, people have died trying to come to the United States by land and by sea. And this was another example of desperate people who were seeking a better life trying to come here. And it's also a symptom, I believe, of a broken immigration system that Congress has refused to fix.
I want to get the Laredo mayor in here in just a moment, and also Roger Enriquez from the University of Texas at San Antonio. Quick call first from Kansas City. John, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, this is not isolated. It made big headlines when it happened, but in October of 2002, 11 immigrants were found dead in a railway boxcar in Denison, Iowa. Now, it made, like I say, big headlines back then. But until they go after the employers who are hiring these people, and, you know, it's going to turn out to be Farmer Jones in a lot of the cases, for agricultural work, that there's not a whole lot of questions asked about their status, this is going to continue. The motivation of the immigrants is to get a better life.
Sure.
We all understand that.
Yep.
But they have to nail these employers, and there has to be strong, stringent prison terms for people that hire the illegals.
You say draw the chain all the way back. And, John, let me hold that thought from Kansas City and get one more, then we'll go right to Laredo, Wauwega, Wisconsin. Owen, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Yeah. And hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just want to reiterate what that last caller just said. Same thing. I'm working on a dairy farm here in Wisconsin. The big dairy farms here, they expand at 1% or more annually. The only reason they expand is because they hire labor that's cheap, that comes from other countries who are not necessarily legal, and that's voter suppression for one thing. Another thing is, if we condone that behavior, are we really Christians? Ask ourselves, if we're actually trying to do the right thing and raise our children properly, would we condone that type of sacrifice somebody has to make to come to this country to allow us to continue to expand so we don't have to work every day and milk our own cows?
Potential death right there. Owen, you're reporting exactly from the front, I guess, that our Kansas City is calling about as well, where the employers are. I want to hold that vividly in mind, and I appreciate both those calls, and go right to Laredo, Texas, and Pete Sines. He is the mayor of Laredo, Texas, right on the U.S.-Mexico border, of course. He's an independent, voted for Donald Trump, against the wall. Mayor Sines, thank you very much for being with us from Laredo today.
Yes, hi, Tom. How are you? Thank you for the opportunity.
We know this is not the first time Texas has seen this kind of tragedy. Back in 2003, we had 19 people in a similar tragedy in Victoria, Texas. The driver of that big rig convicted on dozens of charges, sentenced to life in prison. What do you make of this latest tragic outcome of the human smuggling that the whole country has been watching, Mayor Sines?
Well, it happens far too often, frankly, and of course we know that. There's a need for these people to come, but obviously we're a nation of laws, and I think we need to enforce our laws. We need a strong border security. I think we all understand that, that the border needs to be secured. But also I think we need to work with the where these people are coming from. You know, the government, they need, obviously, more economic development, better jobs over there. They're seeking the U.S. because of better paying jobs, better conditions. But it is presenting issues for us as well. I agree with Congressman Joaquin Castro. I think it should be part of this comprehensive immigration reform. And not that all, we need to survey the needs of our nation and see where we need these people, if at all. And then, offer work visas if suitable. I feel for him as well as a human being. you know, certainly we don't want these tragedies to occur, but they do, and they occur out of need because there's nothing much more there in their country that offers them some security and financial stability.
Yeah. Mayor Sines, if I may, we've got Guillermo Contreras on with us from the San Antonio Express News, and he was sharing with us, if we get into the nitty-gritty of this case, that the current thinking is that they were probably picked up somewhere in your city, in the center of your city. I mean, are you on top of this? Can you be doing more? Is this controllable?
Well, we are. We work very closely with the federal agencies, Border Patrol, ICE people here. I mean, there's over 4,000 Border Patrol people in the border area, the Laredo region here. So it's not because we don't like people here monitoring. Things happen. It's a coordinated effort. It's a mafia type, a cartel type of a function, and we got to stay on top of that. And we can't give up. It's just a sad situation overall, but I think the answer lies over there, better conditions, stronger border security, and then enforcement of our laws here in the U.S., and let's see where it takes us, and being open to this immigration reform. We need that, because I know there's good, decent people here that could truly help the U.S., take jobs that other people wouldn't take. But I guess it's up to Congress, and it's up to all of us, frankly, to speak up. And I'm glad that you're having this program so we can all speak up and share the opinions that we have.
Mayor Sines, stand by in Laredo. Guillermo Contreras with the San Antonio Express News. I know I just have you for another minute. Can you just explain, Guillermo, while we've got you here, why, and if six SUVs did indeed show up in the Walmart parking lot to take people away once the truck was opened up, why are they consolidating these people in the first place in big rig trucks, Guillermo? What's the point of that? They seem to have all kinds of vehicles at their disposal. Why stuff them into big rigs?
Well, it's a good way of concealing a bunch of people at once. I've covered these type of cases all along the border from Arizona to California. They use vans with the seats gutted out, and they'll stack. I've seen vans with 50 people in them.
Vans, not trucks, but vans.
Vans. We've in a previous newspaper I worked with, they took pictures of that. It was just immense the way they work. And it's not just the setups here. We're talking organized crime, in general, or just organized groups. They'll stuff them to however much they think is they'll need. To them it's money. They'll from talking to some truckers, they'll say they'll be approached at truck stops along the way and say, but usually the independents, you want to make some extra money? How about you haul, some heads for us north, and we'll give you X amount of dollars per head. So that's the way, the reality of what happens. And once they get to a location, they'll unload, in an agreed meeting place, and sometimes piece by piece, this group's going to go here, this group's going to go over here, we're going to put this one into this stash house, that kind of situation.
4,000 Border Control agents down there around Laredo, the mayor says, and still very sophisticated distribution going on, but not so sophisticated that it didn't prevent the deaths of 10 in this one truck. Guillermo Contreras with the San Antonio Express News. You're terrific to join us today, and I appreciate it. Thanks a lot for being with us, Guillermo.
Thank you.
Mayor Sines, please stand by. We have Roger Enriquez with us as well from San Antonio. He's Associate Professor, Director of the Policy Studies Center in Immigration at the University of Texas at San Antonio. Professor Enriquez, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for having me.
What do you take away from this tragic story discovered there in the Walmart parking lot in your city?
Right. Unfortunately, because of the situation where we're at, it's sort of the crossroads from Mexico into the rest of the United States, San Antonio does have a pretty rich history of, these operations happening here in San Antonio. I have to say a little, folks have discussed the CETAS and their part in all of this, but, that organization is really, aside from being a criminal enterprise, is really a logistics company, in the sense that they know how to move contraband, they know how to move persons, they know how to move drugs, they know how to move these things in these channels of commerce. And, you know, we had the North American Free Trade Agreement, which helped to facilitate the movement of goods. Mm-hmm. But along with that, you know, the unintended consequences is it helps to facilitate things like contraband and the movement of persons across the border who aren't authorized to be here.
I mean, think about Mayor Sine's role here. He's the mayor of Laredo. And you know, our reporter told us that probably this truck was loaded in his city. Is it his responsibility to work this out? Who should be on top of this?
Right. So the federal government, the immigration laws in this country are the purview of the United States. And they should work in concert with the needs of, obviously, the different municipalities and states that comprise the United States. Really, you know, up until the mid-1990s, we had a fairly robust guest worker program where folks could come in, work, and then return back to the, you know, their nation, right? But stepped up enforcement and things of that nature made that track very difficult, dangerous, and not necessarily a sure thing. So many of those folks decided to just simply stay in the United States. For example, back in 1995, you had maybe 5.7 million people that lived in the United States. That peaked in 2007 to 12.2 million. Mostly due to stepped up enforcement. Folks did not feel comfortable that if they left those summer jobs or those jobs in meat packing plants or where have you, that they would be able to return. So they decided to stay. And many of them had children here. In fact, something like 4.5 million this is the estimate that the Pew Research Foundation has that have children that are U.S. citizens. I suspect that some of the folks in these trucks making this very dangerous trek are simply trying to reunite with their families as well.
Boy, as dangerous as can be here, so many ending up in this case dead. Mayor Sines, I want to bring that observation to you, but one call here first from Chelsea, Massachusetts. Tito Mesa is calling. Tito Mesa, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Thank you, Tom. I just want to make a point. In terms of the tragedy, I'm from Honduras, an immigrant from Honduras. And a lot of people take the risk because the life is so miserable in Honduras. And the government, it's like the government in Mexico, they steal the money that they get. They are really have been taken. It's like mafia's government. So, but it wouldn't be unfair to just say that there's a responsibility from Central America government in Mexico. I think the government of the United States have a great responsibility because they haven't really put attention to those needs of those millions of people that live in poverty and exploit. And I think Mexico is a rich country. They don't need really to put risk these citizens to come to die in the border of the United States.
But do you think the U.S. is responsible to improve the economies of Honduras and Mexico or the fairness of governments there, Tito Mesa?
I think the United States have a great responsibility. Since the 1800s, United States only export all those big monopolies to get money. They're greedy to get money. Even Walmart is everywhere. But where's the help? You know, if people continue to die in the borders. So it's a problem there. And I think it's a problem to be shared with the government of the United States and the government of the region in Central America and Mexico.
Yeah, share the responsibility. Acknowledge that responsibility. I appreciate your call, Tito Mesa. Mayor Sines, what about the overall flow of people coming illegally across the border? We've understood that it's been down in recent years. Is that square with what you see?
Well, it's down, and apparently there's a negative impact now. Apparently, yes, far as Mexicans now, Central Americans, it appears that it has decreased. I think the Trump effect has served to some extent as a deterrent, but still it continues to flow as we've seen, and it's very tragic. And I agree with the speaker above. I think we all have a responsibility, especially the Mexico and the people where these people are, you know, leaving and coming to the U.S. I mean, they ought to come up with a plan and demonstrate to the world, to the United States as well, that, you know, what efforts are doing to try to keep their people in their nations or in their countries. And of course, we as a moral, I would think, a country, you know, would also have to take some responsibility as to, you know, when they're here, we need to try to do the best we can with the resources that we have. You know, resources are limited throughout, and we feel for these people. There's this element of humanity which we shouldn't lose scope of, but it's a universal problem, you know, especially here in the Americas.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we are talking this hour about the southern border of this country and American immigration policy after the human smuggling tragedy in the back of that big rig truck in the Walmart parking lot discovered in San Antonio, Texas, on Sunday. You can join us this hour. We've read the reports of maybe 200 people in the back of that truck. Temperature just crazy. People dying of asphyxiation, of heat stroke. Trying to breathe through one little vent in the back of that big rig, refrigeration not working at all. Just a tragic, tragic scene there. The mayor of Laredo, Texas, where we're told the truck may have picked up its human cargo. Pete Sines is with us today. Roger Enriquez is with us from San Antonio, Texas. He's at the University of Texas there, looking at immigration policy. You can join us as well. Have you pictured yourself in the back of that truck? What that must have been like, the heat, the crowding, and ultimately the horror. Has President Trump's approach here on immigration, is it helping? Is it hurting? And what about the wall? We're going to look at the wall. Here was the president last month at a campaign-style rally in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, saying, need the wall, need the wall. Make it a solar wall.
We will build the wall. We need it. We need it. We have to stop the drugs from flowing in. You know, people don't realize we're already spending a lot of money on design. But I'll give you an idea that nobody has heard about yet. And I'm not sure, but I'm a builder. That's what I love to do. That's probably what I do best. I'm a builder. And we're thinking of something that's unique. We're talking about the southern border. Lots of sun, lots of heat. We're thinking about building the wall as a solar wall so it creates energy. And pays for itself.
Sounds so nifty right there. Things were not so nifty in the Walmart parking lot on Sunday. 10 dead there. All kinds of divided opinion in Texas and lots of opposition to the wall. This was a Congressman Joaquin Castro again talking with NPR's Morning Edition today, saying he's against a $1.6 billion authorization for border wall construction called for by President Trump that Congress will vote on in the next few days. Here's Congressman Castro.
I'll vote against it. It really is a 17th century solution to a 21st century challenge. And the idea that simply putting up a wall is going to solve all our problems, I think, is much too simplistic. And even Republicans in my home state of Texas are against this wall.
It's not just the wall that's had pushback. The Trump administration cracking down on so-called sanctuary cities. San Antonio, Texas has been one. The state of Texas now, the so-called Sanctuary Cities Bill, would compel local police to cooperate with federal immigration authorities. We heard from the police chief of San Antonio, Bill McManus. Here he was again saying he's not for this crackdown on sanctuary cities. His city is a sanctuary city, and he's worried about where this forced cooperation with federal authorities will go. This is the chief of police.
There's not one thing in this bill that I consider to be positive, nor do any of my colleagues consider to be positive. So we are very, very concerned about it. We're very, very concerned about the effects that this bill will have on public safety.
And we're going to look at the wall at sanctuary cities. Kevin Diaz of the Houston Chronicle joins us in just a moment. A couple of calls for Zion, Illinois. Sarah, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Oh, hello, Tom. I am a bilingual elementary school teacher, and I've been dating the custodian for a while, and he's undocumented, and he's a really special guy, and he's worked there 10 years and just holds that school together. We love him. We could not get by without him. And he told me his story of just last week about crossing the desert and how horrible it was. I mean, he's a strong man, and he was just in tears. And I wanted to say that this country really needs that labor. Those farmers, it's not just because it's cheap. They can't find other workers. I know a farmer who can't do that. And these workers are so exploited. Like, the custodians all make $10.50 an hour, no benefits, no vacation, no insurance, and they can't do better because they're undocumented, and employers take advantage of them, which I think it should be the other way around. I think they should make more money. I think that would help out the whole immigration system.
But what would you do for policy, Sarah? I mean, you're engaged with this man now. I mean, you're dating him, but we need a national policy. Or do you just, you want to open the border?
I think that the U.S. does have a responsibility to make those all Latin America more secure and more economically beneficial to their citizens because, like the other caller said, we have a several-century history of exploiting those countries for U.S. and European corporate profits and exploiting people there, taking their land away, and making them work for corporations for really bad wages. And that's why, and supporting corrupt governments that will benefit U.S. policy. That is why those countries are so unstable and economically deprived and have corrupt governments.
Sarah, we've got it. I mean, you're deep in the fabric of this in a relationship with somebody who's come up the hard way out of Mexico here. I appreciate your call. One more, and we'll go to the wall. Oklahoma City, Gary, you're on. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. I just had two quick comments. Mm-hmm. Number one, and what really piqued my interest was the report of the white SUVs to pick up the people from the trailer.
Half a dozen SUVs, they say, swarmed in there once the trailer was busted open.
Yes, those are the coyotes. I was a police officer in Texas, and I investigated a triple homicide with very similar characteristics quite a few years ago. But what we found was that, the people that those SUVs picked up, if their families can't up a little extra money, then they just kill those people. And those folks are in grave danger. You guys have talked about Laredo and San Antonio, but you're overlooking that Houston is a major trafficking hub also. And so that Houston needs to be a big part of it.
We'll go straight to it, Gary, and I appreciate your call and reminding us of the danger even after they're out of the back of that baking truck, that rolling oven. Let's go to Houston, the Houston Chronicle anyway. Kevin Diaz joins us. He's the Washington correspondent for the Houston Chronicle. I've been watching all this and the debate in Washington over the wall that President Trump wants to bring in. Kevin Diaz, you're on with Mayor Sines of Laredo and Roger Enriquez at San Antonio, University of UT San Antonio. Thank you for joining us, Kevin.
Hi, Tom. Thanks. Good to be with you.
What is the latest on the wall? Where does it stand? Is some of it, all of it, going to be funded?
A very small part of it is going to be funded. What's happening this week is that they're talking about $1.6 billion into a military funding bill. And a lot of our Democrats on the border, Philemon Vela, others, are upset about it. They're calling it a gimmick because they're not going to get an up or down vote on the wall money itself. It's just going to be part of the larger funding bill.
And part of a defense bill. How much wall would $1.6 billion build, Kevin?
Not much. They're talking right now about 28 miles of new wall along the border in the Rio Grande Valley of Texas. And I think some of that is actually a new levee wall. So it serves two purposes. It's part of a levee and it's a physical barrier. I think there's also some hundreds of millions of dollars tucked away for 32 miles of actual border fencing. But again, that's not the wall. But when you look at it in terms of the big picture here, I mean, we got to remember that the numbers that have been thrown around for a wall all the way across the board, and I know that the president's backed off of the whole 2,000-mile border thing.
Well, sort of, but when you hear him talk at rallies, he doesn't talk in small terms. He talks big.
Right. No, but he has recently said, well, you know, we do have certain natural barriers. Like, you take Big Bend in Texas to any of your listeners who have been there. I mean, it's all cliffs and canyons. Mm-hmm. They're not going to put a wall there. So there are some places where it's just not practical. But nevertheless, I mean, we're still talking $20 billion plus for the entire project, if that were ever to happen. What's happening now is the Republicans putting in what I would consider to be a token amount of money, $1.6 billion. I know there's a lot of money, but still, in the context of a $20 billion project, it could be a $30 billion project. This is a token amount of money, And it's largely about a symbolic debate in the first place. I mean, even, one of your guests mentioned that even some Republicans in Texas oppose the wall, and that's true. They see the wall, or they talk about the wall more as a metaphor for a tougher immigration policy. They've given up on the actual idea of a physical barrier. But in any event, you know, Trump got nothing or very little for the wall in this year's funding bill. And now, for 2018, he's looking at $1.6 billion. At this pace, it'll take him 20 years to fund this wall.
And if it's $1.6 billion for 28 miles, it sounds to me like the whole length of it would be way over $20 billion, over $30 billion. Mayor Sines, excuse me, you're an independent. You voted for Trump. You're against the wall. Why?
Yes, I am against the wall. Well, yeah, first of all, here in this area, it's impractical. We have a natural barrier at the Rio Grande River. Granted, it's swimmable, but our area here is a network of tributaries of creeks that actually feed into the river. So what do you do if you build a wall? Do you dam up those creeks? We have agricultural uses here also for the river, livestock drink from it, wildlife as well. It presents all sorts of problems. And then the expense, the cost of the wall here, if it's going to be built, which I don't think it will, frankly, because our senator, at least Cornyn, and some of the Congress people are very much against it as well. Keep in mind too, candidate Trump came to Laredo, Texas. We were the only border area. We're the number one land border of the entire Americas. We do over $200 billion worth of trade with Mexico.
Wow.
So the relationship with Mexico from the standpoint of commerce, you know, here, the Port of Laredo, you know, we do over 50% of the trade that goes into Mexico. So it's a very sensitive issue as well. Security is very important. Immigration is very important. But commerce, 14,000 trucks traverse our bridges. We have four bridges here, two commercial bridges. And 7,000 of those trucks end up in the greater U.S. Areas throughout the entire state. We all depend on this trade. So here in Laredo, we're very sensitive and very conscious of the relationship that we have with Mexico. But granted, we got to balance that, and security is also very important to us too. Going back to the wall, no, we don't need the wall. It's impractical. It'll be too costly, and it is going to hurt basically the commerce trade relationship that we have with Mexico. Go ahead.
Roger Enriquez in San Antonio, can you characterize overall for us how Texas political leaders are coming down on President Trump's wall? For, against, something else? What?
Well, those folks who really understand the issues typically are against it. Republican, Democrat, Independent, whatever the case may be. You know, the United States has made sizable investments in Mexico through the Mérida Initiative, trying to build a culture of lawfulness in that nation. And we've actually gotten some results from that. Obviously, it's a, we're talking about something that's going to take a while. But and we see that immigration from Mexico, we're now in a net loss. More folks are going back to Mexico than coming in. That is largely due to investments that we've made, for a lot of things, but also involved in that is these investments that we made to try to build a culture of lawfulness. Obviously, there's still challenges there with the cartels, with corruption and things of that nature, but we shouldn't necessarily just throw out the baby with the bathwater. You know, El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras are all nations that need something like a Mérida Initiative or something along those lines to help them create the building blocks of democracy in those nations.
Mayor Sines, did you say 14,000 trucks come across, what, every how often?
Every day, 14,000. That's an average. 7,000 wow. Trucks going south and 7,000 big trucks going north. So we're NAFTA on wheels, and NAFTA has been very, very good to Laredo, and to the United States. Frankly, I know that's also another issue, but I guess we'll discuss that at a different day. So we got to be very cognizant of that too. That commerce is also very much at stake here. If we put walls in the nations, they may go elsewhere for trade.
Kevin Diaz, do you see in the Trump ICE crackdowns, in the wall talk, do you see a solution to the kind of dynamics that left 10 at least dead in the back of that truck over the weekend?
Well, I think both sides in this immigration debate see a big data point in this tragedy that helps them. I mean, you've got Republicans in Texas who including the governor, who see sanctuary cities as an enticement to immigrants to make this dangerous journey. And then on the other side, you've got people who see the Trump crackdown forcing immigrants to take desperate measures, to hide in the shadows and to take chances. So, you know, where you fall on this debate is, I mean, or where you fall on this tragedy, I think, is going to largely be determined by where you're already at in this immigration debate.
Do you see people say what we need is comprehensive immigration reform to deal with this? Is that anywhere in the offing in this administration, Kevin?
No, it's not. The closest may be where the administration comes down on the whole debate about DACA, the special measures that the Obama administration put in place for young people who were brought in illegally as children. The administration is still wrestling with that. In the past, Trump has talked about wanting to deal with this issue with a heart. But they've also sent out smoke signals more recently that they may shut the program down. They're under a lot of pressure from Republican governors in states like Texas, which oppose this, you know, states that are led by Republicans, I should say, that are threatening to sue the federal government over this. So, but, I mean, as far as any kind of immigration reform agenda, the sorts of which, like we saw back in 2010 or whenever, that's on nobody's radar right now. The two sides are just far too polarized.
And in the middle, or in the meantime, we see exactly what we saw this weekend in San Antonio, and it was just terrible as can be. Really grateful to everybody who's helped us illuminate this in this hour. Guillermo Contreras with the San Antonio Express News, who joined us earlier. Kevin Diaz with the Houston Chronicle, their Washington correspondent for the Chronicle. Thank you very much for being with us from D.C. today, Kevin.
My pleasure.
Roger Enriquez at the University of Texas at San Antonio. Professor Enriquez, thank you very much for your insights today.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for having me.
And Mayor Pete Sines, Mayor of Laredo, Texas. Thank you so much, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you for having us.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Hi, I'm Ron Suskind.
And I'm Heather Cox Richardson.
We're the hosts of Freak Out and Carry On, a new politics and history podcast from WBUR.
Hey, thanks for sticking around for this preview from our show. If you like what you hear, you can subscribe to Freak Out and Carry On wherever you get your podcasts.
Take a listen to this excerpt. We chatted about Trump's approval ratings and historical parallels. And I guess my question is, when was the last time you had a president arrive into office and summon this sort of open, vigorous public protest?
Well, it was the presidency that everybody comes to first whenever they think about American history, and that was the presidency of Benjamin Harrison.
Oh, of course. I mean, the stage play, I love that, and the musical they did. It's fabulous, yeah.
Everyone always forgets about Benjamin Harrison, and there's a reason for that. He gets written out of history, but it was a very similar situation. A person who came to office after a Democratic president, Cleveland, who was popular among people who wanted reform, wanted to make sure the government did not work just for the very wealthy. Harrison said that he would make some reforms, including to the tariff, did not win the popular vote, lost the popular vote by 100,000 votes. Gets put in with the Electoral College. As soon as he gets in, it's very clear that there's been hanky-panky going on. People are infuriated by that. They start to protest, and Harrison and his men keep saying, no, 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 we've got this. We know how to make America work again, how to bring the economy back, although it wasn't actually that bad right then. He puts his son into an important position and simply refuses to note that there is these protests going on, that people are literally starving out in the West. And he completely misses what's happening out West, which is, again, this huge protest that becomes the Alliance Movement of 1890, which takes over the House of Representatives by a margin of 2-1 that year and virtually flips the Senate. And Harrison is completely blindsided by it.
Right, and drives politics forward from that point. I mean, in a way, the reaction to Harrison becomes the defining thing of that
period.
That's
exactly right, and that's where we get the populist movement, and again, the progressive movement grows out of that at the turn of the next century.